We'll call the Health and Human Services Division to order.
For Thursday, March 27th, we're going to have to take bills a little bit out of order. We're down to five bills today. Some of the bills that were traveling toward us actually turned out to have no cost and were inserted into the policy bill. Others have had trouble getting fiscal notes and haven't made it here. So we've got five bills before us. We're going to start with Senator Rosen with the Critical Access Dental Provider, and Senator Sharon's non-emergency medical transportation services. We're expecting a fiscal note any time, but it is not ready right at this moment, so it'll be warm when it shows up, but we'll take it hopefully when it gets here. Senator Rosen, Senate File 2133.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2133 is really just it's been heard actually twice in the HHS policy, Senator Sharon's committee. And this came about because of a situation down in my district. And I hope I didn't leave the HHS policy committee down the path to assume that the provider that this bill was really brought up about was a critical access. He's trying to become critical access. And because of the provisions
right.
that we put into place last year on the bill, he has been unable to get critical access status because basically he would go broke. Right now in greater Minnesota, and especially in the deep rural area, there are very few critical access providers. And he was already at about 50% of MA and uninsured patients. And because of what we had put in place last year, he would have to basically see an increase up to 70-75%, and he absolutely can't do that. It's brought him basically to his knees. He doesn't know what to do. He's thinking of retiring. So we thought about going back to the original language that we had before last year. But as you can see, because of that, the fiscal note is around $646,000 for FY15, and then it moves up greatly after that. So with that, that's a big chunk of money. And there is a handout also that should be at your desk that has been passed out with the critical access dental providers through the state. And as you can see in the map in the back where they're placed, and we have some very large gaps. And after talking with many of the stakeholders here, this is a lot bigger issue than I realized, and it's going to take a little more time than just this short unsession to figure this out, Mr. Chair. And I'm hoping to continue the discussion after this session this year and really drill down to number one. You know, where is the access to our people out there? I mean, we have a situation now in southern Minnesota, and I'm sure it's like that in many other parts of the state too, where people cannot find a provider. And I just heard that Mankato is an hour away from my hometown, and they're not even taking any oral surgeries in Mankato or anybody at all. So I'm not sure where the access is going to be for people in greater Minnesota. There's plenty of critical access providers in the cities, and I know that Health Partners has got quite a few sites, and we're probably up to, I think, about 15 there. I'll be honest, I question some of the sites and their locations and whether, I'm sure they are providing critical access help, but I know half of the money is going in that direction for the critical access work. So this is something that I think we need to talk with the department. They have been working on it. They're a little perplexed, too, on what to do. We talked about single administrator, maybe having a focal point of where to go and move it out. Had an amendment in the last hearing they suggest I forgot what the amendment did, but it did cause quite a stir. And it sunsetted the whole program. And actually, you know, the community clinics, that is a very great concern for them because they are providing the access and dental care for many patients. But I must remind members that they do get another, you know, for Minnesota Care, it's 30%. For MA patients, 35%. And then they get another 20%, which is separate for them, No, excuse me. It's the other way around. I'm sorry. But it's they get a 35 and a 25% match there on the 20%. So with that, I do have Julie Marquardt from the department who can maybe answer more questions on this, but I can guarantee you, Mr. Chair and members, we're going to start sorting this out because I think, as everybody I'm sure around this table believes, that proper dental care is one of the first essential prevention measures that we can take. And we have an issue out there, and we need to do something about that. It's very serious.
Ms. Marquardt, did you have comments, testimony?
Mr. Chair, no, not at this time.
Available for questions? Any questions of members? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rosen. I'm not exactly sure what we're doing with this bill because you said it's got a big fiscal note and there's a lot of work to do. And so are we amending it to make it work for, you know, to get a step closer? What's going to happen with this bill? Because it sounds like we have a big problem you've clearly identified, but we're not ready to solve it today.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Benson. That's a very good question. I mean, we have a big gap. There are no more dentists in southern Minnesota taking new patients. No one. Mm-hmm. So the fiscal note is before you. That's a huge gap to go back to what we had before. I thought about having an amendment just for my specific case, and I honestly don't think that's very fair because there's probably other issues out there that we have not heard about. So, and it's never good to single out one issue. So I'm leaving it to the committee to figure out if this is a priority, if you want to go back to the original language. I know back in, you know, this program started in 2002, and we made some major changes, I believe, in either 2009 or 2010 to include the nonprofits, to include the University of Minnesota, to expand it quite broadly to the FQHCs, and basically move the private dentists out, basically. And I think it's good. We have access in some areas, but I think the pure definition of critical access is not what we're doing here. And I think the intent, the original intent, as I believe it was given, was for greater Minnesota, but we're not fulfilling that.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the reason why I think this bill is really important is because we did make a lot of changes, as you know, Senator Lurie. We worked together in that regard. But sometimes when you make those changes, the intention doesn't always quite work out. And I think it's a very fair way to take this step because what it allows is that those places that do not have some of the nonprofits, other things, where we need the private sector to fill in the gap. But at the rates we pay, they have to keep their doors open. And if they have to take such a large quantity, that just makes it impossible to keep a door open and to meet the need. So I think this is a modest step to respond to Senator Benson. I think this is a modest step. And this step alone may be sufficient, may not, but it's the one that we can do right now. And I consider this actually a quite modest fiscal note, considering the beneficial impact on dental care, which is really important, as we're finding more and more, it's health care, not just teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Senator Rosen, you have somebody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer. I do have Mr. Jason Milner from the MDA that can maybe explain a little bit farther why we didn't go with some of the amendments that were recommended to peel off a few counties, to talk about maybe the program and maybe some changes that we can do going forward. I mentioned the single administrator. I think that is something, it's not single payer, it's single administrator, that I think we can look at over the interim and see how we can make this program work for everybody.
Mr. Milner, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jacob Milner, and I am with the Minnesota Dental Association. I just wanted to thank Senator Rosen for this bill. I think, you know, from our perspective with the MDA, this is a serious issue. We have an access issue, especially in greater Minnesota right now, and I think this takes a step in the right direction. I think, as Senator Rosen mentioned, there's a lot that we need to do, and there's a bill that we propose, Senator Reinert has. It's to create a single administrator, for example, as for Medicaid dental payments that we think can move in the right direction. A lot of states have started moving toward that, and that's something we'd like to discuss with various stakeholders in the interim before next session. But I think that this bill does a lot to kind of move in the right direction because, as Senator Rosen rightly pointed out, there's access in rural Minnesota, which is sorely needed, that people just aren't getting. Dentists just won't see new folks. So I think the steps we can take to kind of alleviate that issue right now is important, and we support that idea behind that.
Thank you, Mr. Milner. Any other questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Rosen, your preference?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair, and just final comments. So with that, you've seen the fiscal note. I think you all understand what we're facing here with this. When we first started the CAD program, it was 235 providers. Now they're down to maybe 50. And this is something I really would like to work on with the help of anybody else around this table and stakeholders in the group. We have to get everybody together to figure out how to make this program work, the adjustments that need to be made. But with that, I will take your advice, and perhaps these conversations can continue about what to do with my provider, who is not going to become critical access, and perhaps will stop taking anymore. But I mean, out of the goodness of their heart, that's what a lot of these providers are doing is they can't turn away the children, and they can't turn away emergencies, and I wish more providers would do that also.
So is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify, either in support or in opposition to Senate File 2133? Seeing none, I would maybe just lay over for possible inclusion in the omnibus HHS article for the finance. The HHS omnibus. Article for the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you.
I should
Thank
read
you.
It every time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Appreciate it.
And on that, Senator Rosen moves mm-hmm. as such. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. All right. Which one do you want to do first? Should we do the technical? Okay. Melissa, I think that the we're still waiting on a fiscal note for the first on the agenda.
Senator Laurie, would you like me to present the essences of that bill at some point, and then we can lay it on the table until a fiscal note comes? It might be a way to move things along.
Well, I was thinking I could, you know, hopefully Senator Hayden will be here and be able to take up his bill. I've got a couple of bills. I'll take up my smaller rather technical bill, and it's good if we have the fiscal note before us, I think.
Madam Chair. File 1744.
Got Senate File 1744, which is an HHS technical corrections bill. This is the first stop. I've got an author's amendment, the A1 amendment. I'd like to move that.
Senator Lori moves the A1 amendment. Would you like to is it an author's amendment?
Yeah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Ayes have it. Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I described, this is a HHS technical corrections bill to correct some of the issues discovered in the omnibus HHS bill last year. And for those technical descriptions, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Albrecht.
Thank you,
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senator Lurie, going through Senate File 1744 as introduced, which is in your packet, Section 1 was just deleted with the A1 amendment. Section 2, which begins on line 3.7 and goes to line 4.6, amends Chapter 108, the Chapter 1, the medical assistance expansion to 133% of the federal poverty guidelines. That provision required an adjustment to the health care access fund if the actual costs attributed to that population ended up being less than the amounts that were used and appropriated in the 2013 session. If you look at the bottom of page 3, line 3.34, you'll see there's a stricken phrase at the end of that sentence that says that the appropriations must be zero. What happens on page 4 on lines 4.4 and 4.5 is that rather than becoming zero, that the appropriations would be adjusted or the transfers would be adjusted until they go down to zero, and that they wouldn't go up. They only go down. Section 3 was just replaced with the 1A amendment. It's on lines 4.7 to 14.4. This section corrects the amount of children's services grants for adoption assistance and relative custody assistance. At the end of session last year, the Department of Human Services provided us the wrong amounts. This correction does not change the appropriation amounts for the grants. It only changes the amount of the total grants that are for this purpose.
And this is a separate bill as well, correct?
Senator Lurie, Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, yes. This is also traveling as Senator Wicklund's bill, Senate File 2404, I think.
2004.
Or 2004. It's also in the governor's budget. On lines 8.31 to 9.2, it also corrects the placement of a rider to match the money appropriated. So the money's in the right place. The instruction of how to spend it is in the wrong place. And if you look at lines 12.1 to 12.7, you'll see the same language being deleted. Section 4 begins on line 14.5. this changes total appropriations to the Department of Health that are related to the changes in Sections 5 and 6. Section 5 begins on line 14.21. This section moves $25,000 of the general fund appropriations from 2014 to 2015. This is to match language requiring an evaluation of the safe harbor provisions in Chapter 108. The evaluation is supposed to happen in 2015. The original appropriation had $25,000 in each year rather than $50,000 in 2015. If you look at lines 17.22 to 17.24, you'll see that there is that instruction there that $50,000 is to be used in fiscal year 2015. So this change accomplishes putting the money where it belongs. Section 6 on line 18 begins on line 18.34. The change is actually on the next page. On lines 19.4 and 19.5, this eliminates a $300,000 appropriation from a special revenue fund. Special revenue funds are statutorily appropriated, and so this had the result of double appropriating that amount. It also corrects the state government special revenue fund appropriation on lines 19.4 and 5. is something you will also hear about in the governor's budget. It relates to a tracking error of a $147,000 appropriation that reflected a July 1st, 2013 effective date for a provision authorizing the infectious disease lab to charge fees for testing services. There's no impact, even though it looks here like there is an impact. There is no impact on the state government special revenue fund because the related revenue to this provision has the wrong effective date. So the correct effective date is July 1st, 2014. Section 7 begins on line 19.23. The change is on lines 20.25 and 20.26. This adds non-cancellation language that has historically been attached to the appropriation for administrative services unit for contested case hearings and other unanticipated legal proceedings. This language was included in earlier versions of the bills in 2013, but somehow dropped when it got into Chapter 108. Section 8 begins on line 21.34. This is similar to Section 2, but it's for the other MA expansion populations that were in Chapter 108. In this instance, the appropriation for MA from the Healthcare Access Fund is reduced if the actual cost attributable to MA expansion populations is less than the amount used in the 2013 session. Again, if you look on line 22.36, you'll see that the stricken language makes the appropriation zero, and instead on lines 23.3 to 23.5, it's the same language as was used in Section 2 that says the appropriations can be adjusted only downward and only until they become zero. Madam Chair, that's the entirety of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Albrecht. Senator Lurie?
Open it for questions.
Any questions from members?
If not, maybe ask if anyone in the audience has comments. Otherwise, I'd move 1744, as it could be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus article. In the article, HHS article for the omnibus bill.
Any testimony from the audience at this time? Hearing none, and Senator Lurie's motion. Excuse me. Any debate? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Ayes have it. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Hayden, I think you're
Senator Hayden.
Top of the morning to you, Mr. Chair.
Senate File 2072.
Good. Oh, what are we at? Oh.
Detox.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was. Did you say 2072?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said.
Did you bring us something?
I thought you said 172. I wasn't prepared for that, but I could add lib if you'd like, Mr. Chair. Not like I've not been known to do that every once in a while around here. Ms. Chair, 2072, detoxification services. This bill was brought to me by chemical dependency advocates who are frustrated with the alarming number of detoxification centers that are being closed throughout the state of Minnesota. You have a handout from the Star and Tribune that points out that more than half of the licensed detox centers in Minnesota has shut down in recent years. There are now just 23 in the state, down from nearly 50 a decade ago. Unfortunately, counties are the sole financial resource for detox centers, and many have a hard decision to close them for other needed spaces. However, closing the centers have not brought down the cost because law enforcement are forced to hold chronic alcohol and drug users in county jail, or they bring them to hospital ERs. As you can see from the handout, the emergency room at HDMC in Minneapolis is treating 700 to 800 a month. This problem is not isolated to the Twin Cities. Law enforcement in rural areas are spending hours driving folks to detox centers hours away. This bill before you directs the Department of Human Services to work with the federal government to provide for Medicaid reimbursement to counties for the cost of detox centers. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Service allows funding for detox centers through the Medicaid program. We have spoken to DHS about this bill, and they're here today to testify it. And so I can go with either two of my testifiers.
Senator Hayden, did you have we have an amendment and a fiscal note drafted to that amendment in the packet. I think you're describing the bill as it comes to us, and that's fine if you want to do that and then get to the amendment.
No, I'd like to move the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So the amendment would change from would change it to be the commissioner shall develop a plan to include detox services in MA benefit. Any questions of members on that amendment? Seeing none, on Senator Hayden's amendment, the A1 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, so and then we have the fiscal note ahead of us. So is it Robert Ray? Rayrett?
Robert Rayrett, Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Robert Rarrett. I'm the director for the Ramsey County Detoxification Center here in St. Paul. And I just want to make a few comments. I'll be brief. In fiscal year 2013, there were approximately 6,500 admissions to the Ramsey County Detoxification Center with a two-day average length of stay. From a sample of 130 clients, approximately 37% of those clients had prepaid medical assistance coverage. If we extrapolate this to all admissions for that year, approximately 2,400 of those admissions would have had medical assistance coverage. With a per diem rate of $235, this would translate to nearly $1 million in cost savings for Ramsey County, using conservative estimates. By 2013, county statewide, we're spending over $40 million annually to provide detoxification to Minnesotans. Most of the funds expended were county property tax funds, since little or no reimbursement from private health plans is available. Many of our clients are eligible for medical assistance, but because this is not a covered service, they are unable to meet their financial obligations, placing the financial burden on the county. Detoxification is a medically necessary service provided to these MA-eligible persons. However, in Minnesota, MA coverage currently only pays for the most expensive level of care offered through hospital settings. A consultant with the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA, visited Minnesota last year and verified that a number of other states have been approved to include all levels of detoxification care as a Medicaid state plan service. Most importantly, MA-eligible individuals who comprise a significant percentage of those served by facilities such as ours would have access to this medically necessary service through their health care coverage. Adding all levels of detox care as an MA-covered benefit would improve access to care and equity of care for disenfranchised persons throughout the state of Minnesota and significantly reduce the number of hospital admissions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rarrett. Mr. Hartford, did you have testimony to add, or are you for questions?
Mr. Chair, committee members, for questions, and just very briefly, just to concur with...
And state your name for the record.
Dave Hartford, Assistant Commissioner, Chemical and Mental Health Services, DHS. Just to concur with what's been said already, that in Minnesota we have only two levels of care for withdrawal management that's currently considered a medical service, and that's hospital care or a physician's office. This effort this year in planning will be to take on the complex task of working with law enforcement, other agencies in order to expand services and create other levels of service that are capable of being reimbursed as a medical service. So with that, I just questions.
Okay. Any questions of members? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question for the testifiers, so would you rather take – it's okay.
No, I mean, comment is fair game as well.
Okay. Well, it wasn't that so much. I just know that if we add this as a covered medical assistance benefit, there is a cost to that, being Finance Committee. I notice here the language says the commissioner shall develop a plan. Does that automatically include a budget, or should we add that here as to what that would add to our costs?
To develop a plan to figure out how to work with the feds, you know, it would come back to us, and then we'd be able to evaluate what it would cost in terms of a medical assistance benefit.
Well, I would rather that we just maybe have the plan and a budget come together. Those other things just take time, and I think it's important to just know that. But whatever you think, Mr. Chair, or the author.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer. I think that it is important to start to do some long-term fiscal planning, but I think what we're trying to do here is to have the department develop a plan, talk to CMS, and at that point, then we'd have a much better understanding of what it would cost, and at that point, then we'd probably have new legislation that would come in front of you to figure out what it would cost as we develop different levels of care to take care of these folks.
Senator Hayden, Mr. Hartford, did you, with the bill as drafted, where you know we set you upon trying to get federal approval, was there a fiscal note drafted to what that would cost before this amendment was? Do we have an idea to help Senator Kiffmeyer understand? I mean, we wouldn't put it in this fiscal note, but it might be helpful to have some idea what it might cost if this were an approved.
Mr.
benefit.
Chair, there was a fiscal note drafted with the original language, but the original language was not really reflective of what it wasn't very accurate as to what it would actually look like in the plan.
Okay. So are you able to offer Senator Kiffmeyer any testimony as to what it might cost if we were successful in getting this covered as a Medicaid benefit?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I really couldn't do that at this time. There is one note that the current system today is approximately $20 million a year that counties are spending in this endeavor, and this would allow us to capture federal match as a Medicaid service. But I don't have an estimate because we have not determined there's a possibility of offering this in Rule 31 programs as well as which are chemical dependency programs and Rule 32 programs, and those numbers have not been done yet. So by getting people the services that they need at the appropriate level of service, we're hoping to save money in the long run through some of this.
Senator Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hartford. So if we do get the federal match, then we save the counties $20 million and we save hospitals some charity care. So net, we save money in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Hartford?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I do not have those estimates. I can't really address that at this point. What we have today is Rule 32 care that is not a medical benefit that the counties are paying. It's basically a public safety service that we created a number of years ago, and it is not a medical benefit. So what we have is not a health care benefit that the counties are responsible to pay.
And so in order to make it a Medicaid-covered service, you'd have to have it really be a medical-type service, a clinical-type service rather than what it is today. So it's not, I think that's what they're trying to get at, is that the county costs that are incurred today aren't really for clinical services in their nature and wouldn't be allowed under the Medicaid benefit set. So we need to think about what service would be allowed under the Medicaid benefit set. How would it look? How would it roll out in the street? How would we get the provider network built to have those services available for people? And it's a more complicated question than just trying to do to fit what we do today into the Medicaid world. And that's why the fiscal note that had been drafted doesn't really work, and trying to do that work in a short time period so that we have it before us next year to consider will give us that additional guidance. I think that's what we're saying here,
Mr. Chair. Hartford. That's correct.
Okay, Senator Benson, a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering who treats these people at the county. Are they treated by medical staff now? Do we know?
Mr. Rarrett, you're probably best to answer that, or Senator Hayden.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the clients that we treat now are treated in a medical environment by nursing staff 24 hours a day and clinical staff, that is, counseling staff, other paraprofessionals.
Any additional questions? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad I brought it up because I think it's an important consideration. And sometimes I get frustrated when the process goes through and we set up reports and studies and plans, and then they don't have that completeness for us to really look at things. So my main goal here is to make sure that that is considered in its development and early on, so we can really fairly take a look at it. And I think having brought it up and hearing the discussion, I think that that will be helpful. But I don't think any language needs to be changed at this time.
Okay. Senator Hayden?
Well, no, Mr. Chair, I think we should move the bill. I think that these are great questions and that they'll be continued to be answered. It's not a tangerine-to-tangerine comparison. And so, therefore, I think these are good questions to ask.
Anyone in the audience wish to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 2072? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Roberta Opheim, the State Ombudsman for Mental Health, Developmental Disabilities, and we also serve children with emotional disturbance and people with chemical dependency. I can tell you that we welcome this opportunity. We think that this has been needed for a very long time, so we would be very much in support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Opheim. Is there anyone else in the public that wishes to offer testimony, support, or opposition? Seeing none, Senator Hayden moves that Senate File 2072 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS article for the finance omnibus as amended. On that motion, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Hayden. Thank you. Now, is Senator Sharon still here? I think what we did with the non-emergency medical transportation was request that the DHS portion of the fiscal note be sent over to us. It'll just be handed out to members so that we can look at it. The holdup on the fiscal note is not DHS. It is the Department of Transportation. They're working. It's going to be a very minimal piece that they have, if any. But I guess Senator Sharon is out for a little bit right now. I don't think – so I think we'll just recess until Senator Sharon's ready and we have that fiscal note, because Senate File 2754 will likely take the balance of our time, and rather than push non-emergency transportation to the end, we'll just recess to the call of the chair. HHS division back to order, and we have a preliminary fiscal note to hand out that does have the whole thing, but we're only going to hand it out to members. It's preliminary at this point. It does include the DOT portion, but they haven't signed off on it yet, so Senator Sharon, you should have a copy of it. Are they being handed out? And with that, we will take up Senate File 2660. Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much. Senator Lurie, there is an amendment that we would like to have distributed.
Okay. We've got the...
In the bill that is in front of you, which we will discuss more thoroughly in a moment, There are significant changes to the organizational structure of how non-emergency medical transportation services will be provided. One of the recommendations of the auditor was to go to a single administrative system. In the past, we had divided our transportation system into special transportation services and into all, what was ATS, what did it stand for?
Access.
Access services. Right. And it was a sort of a division based on acuity. All of our efforts have been to make sure that people who are on medical assistance get the rides they need to their medical appointments, but make certain that the ride that is paid for and purchased is appropriate to the level of need and is not excessively expensive to the system. So the work of the task force that was formed as a result of the auditor's report and our request to have a review for how to improve this system has been meeting for 2 years and have come up with a bill that is in front of you, which is a hard-fought agreement about how to resolve issues around non-emergency medical transportation. But because we will not be able to implement all of its components immediately, we need this amendment, which makes it clear that the old system, which used these divisions of STS and ATS, can continue to operate to help help the system determine level of need, not level of need, but determine the appropriate ride based on the level of need. And so we need this amendment to help our system to continue to operate as we implement the changes that you will be reviewing in Senate File 2660.
Senator Sharon, has the department evaluated this as far as fiscal implications? Is this incorporated into the fiscal note that the Department of Human Services completed?
It doesn't really change anything, so I would ask the department to speak to that, but it doesn't really have a change to the
I would ask
anything.
The department as well. If they need a minute, we can we could maybe
you would ask me to just continue. Well, I guess
well,
we have to act
like
on the motion.
They're close. I see somebody inching toward the table. Mr. Haltman, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Patrick Haltman with the Department of Human Services. This keeps the current structure in place. The current legislation, I think, delays the changes for another 2 years. We don't think that this has an effect on the fiscal note.
Okay. So on the A3 amendment, any discussion from members? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Sharon, on the bill.
Thank you, Senator Lurie. On the bill itself, as I indicated, I don't know if the members who are here remember the history of the struggles that we've had over many years with trying to get our non-emergency medical transportation right. It's difficult to accomplish that because our state has such diverse counties, diverse abilities, diverse resources in terms of transportation, that it's very difficult to have a model developed that is able to be responsive to the persons who have this privilege under the medical assistance program to get assistance with getting a ride, no matter where they live in the state of Minnesota. And we've had a number of struggles back and forth that have been in front of this legislature over the last 8 years, if not longer, certainly the years that I've been here. And so we asked for an audit of the non-emergency medical transportation to look at some of these disagreements that we were having about how services were being provided and about how the process of the level of need was being implemented and of the ability of the system that we had in place to accurately make recommendations for clients' transportation based on what the various counties were capable of being able to do. And so a task force was formed in the, by this legislature and asked to bring forward this piece of legislation. It was given a year to do that work. We couldn't get it done in a year. It was very difficult. We had all of the representatives of various counties, rural and urban. We had providers at the table. We had brokers at the table. We had the departments at the table of transportation and DHS trying to put together something that could work with all of those various tentacles that play into non-emergency medical transportation. So what you have in front of you is the result, finally, of that committee. And what it does, in essence, is make some changes in how level of needs are done. It develops a policy manual that clearly describes the process for which level of need is to be conducted. It separates the role of doing the needs assessment from a ride, making the arrangements for a ride so that there's no kind of interest on the part of the assessor to come up with a certain conclusion in order to get a benefit on the other side of arranging for a person's ride. We've cleaned all of that up. We've created a single administrative structure by changing from this system of STS and ATS, which differentiated rides, to a system where rides are determined on the basis of a description of the person's level of the level of support that they need in order to have that transportation. And that now is called MODES. And we've created an opportunity for a ongoing task force to review recommended changes to the policy manual before it being implemented by the Department of Human Services. With that, I think I will turn this over to Sue Abderholden, who you should all know chaired this committee.
Bless your hearts.
And I can tell you, co-chaired the committee, and I can tell you it was a task for which she deserves a direct route to heaven. Do not pass go. Do not collect. Just go straight to heaven. And there are many others in the audience who have, I mean, we've struggled with one another. Sometimes these meetings have been very, very difficult, but certainly everybody was engaged, and it was a hard process. So I just need you to know that what we have here is it has been agreed to, and that people really are not willing to say that they can commit to it if we make significant changes to it, because it's put together in a way that is responsive to all these variations and concerns throughout the state. So with that, let me introduce Sue Abderholden.
Ms. Abderholden, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And while I am looking for that stairway to heaven, I do want to say that we really had a wonderful group of people, very passionate about the issue, very knowledgeable about it as well. I've learned more about NEMT than I ever wanted to. But I think what you have is really a carefully crafted compromise that people can live with. And I think actually that also addresses the many concerns that came out of the legislative auditor's report. As Senator Sharon mentioned, you know, we will actually have a single administrative structure. We can't get there tomorrow. We need a two-year window to really move in that direction. But once we get there, I think it will be very much simplified for clients who are trying to find access. I do want to point out this is fee-for-service, so it's even a smaller group of individuals because, as you know, we have more and more people going into managed care. So it's not the entire system. It's just those folks. One of the reasons we have to delay it for 2 years is we really need this web-based technology that actually exists out there, including in Carver Scott counties with SmartLink. We want to make it easy for the providers to put in their information into a web-based system, especially dealing with 87 different counties, because it's a county that will really be the structure handling both what we used to call ATS and STS. Another important thing, I think, is that all the providers, except public transportation and volunteers, and not for hire, people's own vehicles, will now have to meet the same driver and vehicle requirements. And considering that we are transporting some of our most vulnerable adults and children, I think it's important for us to make sure that we have safe vehicles and good drivers. The cost of doing that for the Department of Transportation would actually be covered by a fee. And because we have no idea how many of these vehicles that now would have to meet these standards will actually want to be certified, we're going to ask that those providers seek a waiver from the department from meeting the requirements until next year, so we can find out how many really want to do this. And then the Department of Transportation will be able to figure out how many vehicles and what that fee would be to cover that cost, which is why there's no cost right now for this first year. I do want to mention in the policy manual that we've all worked hard on, there is actually a flow chart for call intake to make sure that people are getting routed to the right type of transportation, especially those one-time upgrades that you might need, especially dependent on the weather. So you might have someone who is, elderly, who can normally, go down the street and walk to the bus, but on a really icy day, they're not going to be able to do that. Conversely, you might have someone with a serious mental illness who in August, because of the antipsychotics they're on, you can't sweat, and that becomes a health hazard. They could be upgraded for that one time because of that condition as well. So I think we're being very sensitive to the needs of people. We're also making sure that the level of service assessment application can be filled out not just by a medical professional, but a mental health professional as well. We'll be able to examine data regarding complaints and appeals, and we're also making sure that there's no wrong door for the recipient in filing a complaint, and we'll be able to monitor and assess them. As Senator Sharon pointed out, we have these new modes of transportation, so 2 years from now, we won't be differentiating from door-to-door and door-through-door. It's just going to be assisted transport, which I think will really help in that regard. And we'll be adding a new form of transport called protected transport. This is the one thing I get out of the bill. And this is to make sure that when someone is having a psychiatric crisis, they can actually be transported with dignity, not in the back of a police car in handcuffs, not tied down to a stretcher, but by a protected means, which we actually have going in three counties in Minnesota already, kind of like an unmarked police car, if you will. So you have the plexiglass. They can't get out in terms of locks if they were suicidal, but a much better way to be transported, frankly, than in a police car. During this interim time, again, we're going to have counties continue to administer what they do in the state to what they do until we get this web-based system in place. I also want to note that the payment is now by mode and not by the type of vehicle, and I think that's an important thing for the future as well, so that we're really focusing on that. And then we're also encouraging the more inexpensive modes. So we did increase volunteer travel. We couldn't pay for their what we call the non-load miles. So if they drop somebody off and then come back home, we can't do that under federal law yet. But what we could do is just increase their overall rate. And you'll notice in the bill we said may take that rate, because for volunteers, the money that they get that's above the standard IRS rate, they have to claim as income. So some people may not want to do that. So we've left that in there as for flexibility. And then the advisory committee will continue, and now that we all know how to sing together, I think it'll work really well. And we need to just be able to address any issues that come up as we're implementing this, which I think is good. Again, I think this is it really is a good compromise. As you know, this has been a very contentious issue here at the Capitol. There are many people in the room who've worked on this for years, and you'll see they're not jumping up to testify against this bill. We really have worked out a compromise on a very difficult issue, and so would urge your support.
Any questions of members? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just there's a couple things that I want to ask about. Is this the same policy, but just a different administrative structure?
Senator Sharon?
Well, the underlying principle is that a person who's on medical assistance has, as a part of their coverage, the right to have help to be transported to that appointment. That's the underlying principle. This is all about how we design a system to carry out that responsibility. And so this bill changes what we used to do in terms of the organizational structure for implementing that right under medical assistance, so that we have consistency across the state in terms of determining the levels of need, and yet some flexibility so that when a ride is assigned, that it recognizes the variations of resources across the state. And it allows the single administrative structure is referencing this change from ATS and STS to modes of transportation. The modes are described in your bill here. So if someone is assigned to a certain mode, it automatically defines the kind of transportation resource that person needs to be transported. If they can meet a lower level, a different mode that has a less complex transportation need, but it's not available in their county, then they're allowed to move up into the next level of transportation because it simply is not available.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my question is, so this is designed for those who need help. What about those who are driving their own vehicle?
That's covered too.
And don't need that kind of help. They're able to drive. This is a non-emergency, and they're able to drive or go themselves.
Yes, I can see how the word emergency could be confusing there. The legislation for the benefits of medical assistance allows a person who's on medical assistance to be reimbursed for driving their own vehicle to a medical appointment only. This is only for medical appointments.
And that's current policy.
Yes.
I have another question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. If there is no change, this is the current policy, and this is going to give us some efficiencies, then I'm puzzled as to, in the next fiscal year, of an increase of $17 million and an additional 5 employees. That doesn't seem to match with what I'm hearing you testify to.
Well, the money is for the increase.
Senator Sharon.
Some of the money that you see is in the increases in the rates. If you look at the language in the rates, we have increased rates for volunteer drivers. So there's assumptions there about what that would imply. So it encourages a lower level of expense for ridership. Oh yes. There was a 4.5% rate cut to the providers that we restore.
Any other questions of members? Anyone else from the audience wish to testify either in support or opposition to Senate File 2660? Seeing none, Senator Sharon moves that Senate File 2660, as amended, be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS articles of the finance omnibus. On that motion, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Nope. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Sharon. All right.
Senator Lurie, Senate File 2754.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do have Senate File 2754. This is the Governor's Health and Human Services sections of the supplemental budget. Through in this committee the change pages as they were initially released, and we've been through a few policy committees with this. I'm going to go very briefly, and maybe just an orientation for members and for the public. I know there has been some concern. This bill is actually not the vehicle for our article. There was some confusion around that in the public. This will be laid on the table at the end of our hearing, just like every other bill, and we will have our article released next Monday for people to look at and make amendments to. So this isn't people's last chance. There was some confusion around that. I just want to make that clear. So we're going to hear this just as any other bill, lay it on the table for possible inclusion, hopefully, at the end of our discussion. And there, in Senate File 2754, again, we presented the pages as they were first introduced and then have been through the policy committees. So I'm just going to go briefly and say Article 1 is the Health Department article. Article 2 is the DHS's health care article. Article 3 is the North Star Care for Children. Article 4 is the CFSS changes discussed. Article 5 is the continuing care article from DHS, and then 6 is a couple of miscellaneous provisions. I do have some amendments that have been worked on with the Department of Human Services and various stakeholders. I will start with the A3 amendment, Madam Chair.
Senator Lori has the A3 amendment. As it gets passed to members, if you would like to explain what's on the amendment.
The A3 amendment is, when this was first heard in our committee, members may recall that there was a proposal by DHS to close out FQHC claims 2 years back. And that drew some comments from the FQHCs, and DHS listened and worked with them and have a proposal for how to accomplish that goal in a way that seems to work better for the FQHCs. So that's the A3.
Members have the amendment. Any questions on the amendment from members? So on the motion, Senator Lori, you did move the amendment.
I moved the A3 amendment.
On the motion to move the A3 amendment, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I have the A5 amendment.
Members get the A5 amendment. Senator Lori, would you wish to describe what's in the amendment?
The A5 amendment is largely a technical amendment brought to me by DHS and represents a few items that have been worked out with various stakeholders that have concerns in the bill. I know of no opposition to it. We can have the department come if members wish greater detail.
Members, any questions on the A5 amendment?
Yes.
Senator Sharon?
Senator Lori, I don't want to put you on the spot because you might not remember, but could you explain what the goal of 1.7 is? The commissioner and county agency shall expedite any request for a set-aside or variance for a background study required.
Senator Lori.
What would be the situation in which a set-aside or variance for a background study would be expedited?
I'm going to have the department talk about this change.
Yep. State your name for the record, and please proceed with the response.
Madam Chair, members, my name is John Sellen. I'm project lead for North Star Care for Children at the department. And this particular thing was worked out with stakeholders. There was a concern that under some circumstances, the background studies might disqualify relatives who would be good candidates for a transfer of legal custody of a child that they're related to or an important friend to, and so there's a option here for an expedited request for a variance from the department of the background study. One of the examples that was used was of a grandmother who was a good candidate but had, in years past, had a conviction for a check forgery.
Senator Sharon?
Yes, thank you. But it relies then on the department, whoever reviews these requests, to analyze that history and make a judgment about this. Okay.
Anything further?
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Any further discussion or questions from members? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to get clarity on 112, 113, and I'm trying to read as fast as I can. I always get a little concerned when it says regardless of eligibility for North Star kinship assistance. So we're trying to put something into place, and now we're saying regardless of. So I just want to make sure that we're not creating a hole that we don't need to create.
Mr. Sellin.
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, this is a good question. It's part of the same discussion with stakeholders. And what this is clarifying is that the court still has the option of transferring the child's custody to the relative, even if the relative isn't eligible for North Star Care. North Star Care has Title IV regulations, and so the federal requirements may prevent the relative from being eligible for North Star Care benefits, but we didn't want to limit the court's authority in that situation.
Any further questions? With that, Senator Lurie moves the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, I have the A6 amendment.
Senator Lurie.
And on the A6 amendment, as members are getting it here, this is really kind of in response to some abrupt closures of mental health facilities around the state. And what this is requiring is transition plans if mental health closures occur, to make sure that there isn't quite such the disruption in clients' lives that seems to be occurring right now in the central portion of Minnesota. And this was, Sue Abderholden again worked hard on this with the department. It's my understanding that there would be no fiscal note associated with this, and it really requires a transition plan. I do think that this is a good start to working on this. I understand that just recently there may be some concern raised by counties, but I can assure you we will continue to work on that. I'm not sure if those have been worked out to this point or not, but we are in conversation, and I think having a placeholder here that we are actually really concerned about making sure that there's some continuity of care for mental health clients, and that the severe disruption that we've seen doesn't occur again, and that there is some transition plan put in place. So, I mean, it may need a little bit more work, but this is a really important provision that is in response to some fairly recent developments. And so I would encourage member support of the A6 amendment.
Members, any questions? Senator Sharon?
Yes, no, I think this is an absolutely important addition to the bill, even though we really... It's really a response to something that, as we learn from the experiences we have in the system, it's just important for us to put in place something that helps us be better prepared for difficulties. So I really want to support the department's need to have this language.
Any other questions? Senator Lurie moves the A6 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Amendment is adopted. Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, I have an oral amendment. Move that we strike page 80, line 13, which is a request from Minnesota Disability Law Center. They are included in a review panel for the Jensen settlement, and they say, well, they may need to represent these clients, and so it would be a conflict if they also sat on this panel. And so they requested that they be removed. And so I'd like to move that we strike page 80, line 13, and get them this.
Senator Lurie,
panel.
Council is informing me that the First Amendment might have already deleted that.
Oh.
Mr. Chair, yes, it's on the A5 amendment. Actually, it's on page 2, line 14. That was deleted.
Okay.
Mr. Senator Lurie.
Draw my amendment. And then that one, I had one other. The other one is also Article 5 provision. It also was removed. Okay, that's the end of my amendments, Madam Chair. I would stand for questions and ask that the department come up and respond to any additional concerns and questions that the members may have.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lurie, on Article 2, the very first section has to do with matching recipient third-party liability information on the bottom of page 6. And entering into a contract with a national organization to match recipient third-party liability information and provide coverage and so on. And could you explain that a little bit more? What's the need and what's the how this all works?
Senator Lurie?
Yeah, Madam Chair. This is also in the change pages that are in members' packets. It's on page 21 of there. It's the coordination of benefits proposal. Page 21 here, and really this is a national clearinghouse, a nonprofit group that provides this clearinghouse service for the department and for providers to log in and take a look to see if there's any other type of payment before billing the department Medicaid.
Madam Chair.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, my concern here, and I noticed that you did another amendment. It was the A5 amendment, which was for page 60, line 34, consistent with the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act. Could you explain if that is in this statute as well?
Senator Lurie.
Whether the coordination of benefits would be consistent with the Government Data Practices
Well,
Act?
I'm just Senator asking Kiffmeyer. If it is.
Is that your question? I'm trying to get clarity.
Yes. If it's already being done or if that needs to be added.
Anyone from the department will just speak to whether we'd have to actually explicitly say that this coordination of benefits proposal would need to be consistent with the Government Data Practices Act?
Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and Member Stacey Meyer with the Department of Human Services. To answer your question, Senator Kiffmeyer, the change on line 60, page 60, line 34, is in regards to the Community First Services and Supports Program. And the amendment here is clarifying to the language we're adding about any data requests from the department that we also would be subject to the government data practices. It's just adding the clarification that that statute would also apply to any data that we would request from CFSS providers.
Senator I'm not Kiffmeyer. Sure if that answered my question because it's...
Not sure it did either. I think the question was, if I may, Senator Kiffmeyer, mm-hmm. was regarding the coordination of benefits and whether we would need to clarify that the contract that the department would enter into for the coordination of benefits with that national clearinghouse would also need to be clarified that it would have to be consistent with the Government Data Practices Act. Correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sandy Burge, and I'm the manager of the Benefit Recovery Section at the Department of Human Services for third-party liability. Yes, we do have to not only comply with the Data Practices Act, but also HIPAA, and also there are specific regulations we have to meet in the CMS regulations in order to share data.
Okay, that answers my well.
So,
Senator,
Madam Chair, so we wouldn't need to add it to this section. This goes into a section of law where that's already thoroughly covered, would be my understanding of your response. Is that correct?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. All right, that answers it. Thank you,
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you.
Any further questions from members? Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on the total bill, are you talking about any more amendments? For the department, actually, or Senator Lurie, this Section 48, the quality...
On which article?
I'm sorry, Article 5.
Article 5, Section 48.
Page
120. 120, yes.
5.
Subdivision 16, Section 8.
Section 40.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I suppose we can go into this again, how we all feel about this quality rating for the... No? We don't want to do that? No? Okay. Should we amend it out?
This is the...
Senator Lori.
Madam Chair.
There's more.
I believe this is...
It's the 4%. This is the 5% campaign. Mm-hmm.
Provides a 4% rate increase to ICFs, ICFDDs, July 1st, 2014, with 1% of the increase reduced on January 15. Oh, this is part of the 5% campaign,
right,
for ICFDDs.
Well,
Yeah.
4% plus 1%. Yes, 4%.
The 3% and then prove yourself.
I always say the 5% campaign is the name of a movement, not a formula.
Well, I just, thank you, Madam Chair. I just, you know, for the record again, have a very, very hard time with it. And after reading the language here on line 27 on page 120.27, improve the quality. How can you measure improving the quality of life of the residents in a meaningful way? Improve the quality of services. Deliver good quality service. I mean, it's almost ridiculous.
So,
Senator Lurie,
perhaps that's a little tough to say that, but this is, you cannot improve anybody's quality if you don't have good quality, consistent people there helping these folks. So, you know, for the record, I strongly disagree with the department's initiative. And I think it's a one step forward, two steps back with this.
Okay.
Senator Lurie?
Madam Chair, now I'm tracking. We had this conversation in depth,
yes,
regarding whether or not the 1% of the 4% that the governor put in his supplemental budget should be reserved for completion of a one-page online form that met one of these. And we had that conversation quite a bit. And your thoughts on the matter are on the record, and I take them seriously.
Thank you.
Senator Hayden?
Well, just since we're talking about it and we brought it up, I have to really, 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 really strongly agree with Senator Rosen that, you know, and I talked to the department about this, and that this approach, first of all, we haven't funded, you know, these folks appropriately, which is a problem. And then when we do it with a caveat. And this is consistent with conversations we've had across the system, no matter who's receiving assistance, about how do we create incentives and carrots so that people can get the care that they need in a good quality way, as opposed to punishing them. And it even becomes absolutely, if I may use Senator Rosen's words, even a little more ridiculous to say that a one-page online system qualifies you to be able to get the 1%. If we were serious about that, we would develop a metrics and goals and have a conversation, pay people appropriately, and then see if they met them, as opposed to simply throwing it in and saying, because the answer from the department, quite frankly, with all due respect, is, well, what's the big deal? All that they really need to do is fill out the one pager and they'll get it. Well, if we're going to do it and be serious, we should have something a little more thorough, pay folks appropriately, and then go out there and measure their success, and not just simply have them fill out a one-pager so that it looks as though we've done a good job in promoting quality. So no matter if you look at it from the perspective of, are we paying folks enough? We've cut. Now we need to get them up to speed. Or if you really, and your intention is to really get the greatest quality, we should be doing so much more in terms of making sure that that happens than throwing in some language and statute that says, well, if you just fill this out, then you'll get it. So no matter how I look at it, it just borderlines the absurdity that we would continue and that the department wouldn't listen to our concerns about how do we go about measuring quality, as well as creating an environment in which we're actually resourcing these organizations appropriately. So, you know, to that end, that's maybe even stronger than what Senator Rose has said, who I know feels passionately, and Senator Ekin, and all of us, I shouldn't point out certain members, about how we go about funding these facilities.
Senator Lurie, and then I have Senator Sharon and Senator Benson.
No, well, go ahead.
Senator Sharon.
Well, I would offer an amendment, because I think we've had the discussion, so I think we should put something on the table rather than just discuss it. I fatigue at that, I got to tell you the truth. So, and then we could vote on it and move on, perhaps. So what I would, this is an oral amendment. On page 120, line 23, eliminate B through the comma and capitalize each. And eliminate on line 31 all of line 31, 32, and 33.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as Mr. Lobeco pointed out, this is also on 133.
I was going to say, you know, maybe before we act on this, I can just give a few thoughts. Because, you know, I listened to the conversation that we had in committee, and do respect our committee's work. I think we do really good work on this committee. And, you know, I have no intention of putting this quality piece in our omnibus budget articles that we forward to full finance committee for inclusion. And there are several pieces of this. We'd have to go through and do quite a bit of work to find each and every one of these today. So I don't want to tip my hand too much about everything that's going to be in or out, but I did listen carefully to the conversation that we had. On Monday, when we see the language, it will not include that 1% set aside.
Senator Sharon, would you like to withdraw your oral amendment?
Yeah, I appreciate what Senator Lurie is saying. I'm ready for us to take action, because I think we've fully described our concerns about this.
Senator Benson?
And thank you, Madam Chair. Mine was just to echo what Senator Hayden said. The one-pager means it's either automatically you get the 1% or it's completely arbitrary. There aren't any guidelines that, you need a full paragraph of description, five-page essay. There's nothing. And poorly thought-out policy and should not be moved forward by this committee.
Senator Ekin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Lurie. I also agree with those that had concerns about tying it to the funding. And I already voiced my opinion on the fact that I thought that it sent the wrong implication or the wrong message, that somehow they're getting a lot and that they need to justify the amount that's being appropriated when, in fact, it's far short of what's needed out there. So I certainly think that it's important that we look at quality. And as Senator Sharon, I think the amendment was a good one that you proposed here. Having them do the page, maybe, and have people thinking about the quality, but not necessarily tying it directly to the appropriation, which, again, sends the wrong implication, I think. So thank you. Appreciate the fact.
I'll withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Withdraws her amendment. Any further discussion or questions regarding the bill in front of us?
You know, one additional piece that I should go into a little bit, one matter of significant concern in this bill has been the hospital rebasing that we are working on, and I want to just assure members that we are having very, very active and productive conversations with the Hospital Association. We don't have an amendment today to offer that would actually add any clarity, but we are having those conversations. By Monday, we will have much better language, and so those amendments would be coming in that budget bill, and we'll probably still have conversations going on beyond that, but it will have some of the banding concepts. I'm hoping to have a little bit of the, as the Hospital Association described it, a little bit of the sweetener to help things along a little bit. So I anticipate we'll have a more thorough discussion of those matters on Monday, and some much better language than we're ready today to lay on the table and kick around. But anyone who's I'm interested. I know that there's a lot of folks around here who have been working on it, and make sure that your concerns are registered and they'll be considered as we keep working on that.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you for that comment as well, Senator Lori. Health policy also spent time talking about this, trying to grasp it and understand its implications, which are hard to do with the current language, and so it's hard to vote for it. But I would just inform you, as those conversations are going forward, of something that I know you are informed about, but for the committee, that there is some concern about the process by which the department has made a determination for who they are going to contract with in order to work out issues related to the grouper, et cetera, and are concerned that a contract is being developed with a provider without others having an opportunity to compete for that work. So I'm hoping that you will look at that to make sure that that process is transparent and open and fair.
Senator Lori?
Happy to make sure that's addressed.
Any further discussion? Any testimony from the public at this time? Seeing none. Senator Lori, would you make a motion? Oh, we do have someone coming up.
Good.
Yes.
We did have one more concern that's been raised to me.
Ms. Henry, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Sorry, I was confused that maybe it was about the hospital rebasing issue. So appreciate the opportunity to say a few words. I have two areas of concern. The first one is in Article 4 with the new PCA program, Community First Services and Supports. We did work out a lot of language with DHS in the A5 amendment. But one, an amendment which we think is absolutely essential is not among them. It's in a bill that Senator Eakin has, and that is to remove the restrictive definition of dependency. These were cuts, part of cuts made in 2009 that have worked to discriminate against people with mental illness, brain injury, and developmental disabilities who don't have physical disabilities. And it excludes those people from getting this kind of daily help at home, whether they can accomplish their activities of daily living or not. And we believe that really needs to be changed. And I think one of the most important things I want you to know is that our changes in this program are really many, many good things, and people have been waiting a long time for them. But this is of concern because we think it directly violates federal law, besides being wrong. And our amendment is now pending at the federal agency. And we're concerned if this isn't taken care of, that we could be required to make this change, and we won't be able to make it now until next year if that's the case. We're for sure going to be delayed. CMS is taking this seriously, the federal agency. Unfortunately, it's hung up because of cost, and it appears to us at this point it's really in the hands of Commissioner Jessen and the governor in terms of being a signature part of Reform 2020 that may not be able to move ahead. I think the last point on that is that we stand to gain an extra 6% in federal Medicaid match for our entire PCA program when this is approved. And so delay also has a fiscal impact. And with that, I'll turn to the other issue. In Article 5, which is a lot of language about Chapter 245D, new license requirements for home and community waiver services, we support many of the changes there, many of which were brought forth by the mental health community to make sure that these programs worked for people with mental illness. However, we are very concerned about a plan laid out in the language that would remove protections against aversive practices such as mechanical restraint and seclusion from the statute, where they were just put last year, and put them into a rule that hasn't yet been developed and certainly isn't promulgated. And we're concerned for a couple of reasons. One, we think these clear protections should be in statute because it's much more accessible for the general public to understand. And unless we have broad understanding, we're not going to be doing what we need to for people. But we're also concerned about confusion. People are now being trained on this new, on these requirements in the statute, and we've got a repealer in here that says they're going to be repealed. So, I mean, the repealer is structured so that it would only happen when the rule is effective. But nonetheless, these are technicalities that the general public, I think, will not understand. So we really are seeking that this repealer be deleted. It's section, I believe, 49. Now, we understand the department believes they have to do this because of the Mito settlement and the Jensen case. And with that, I will turn it over to the ombudsman, who's been really involved in that.
Thank you, Ms. Henry. Ms. Oppenheim, please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Roberta Oppenheim. I'm the ombudsman for mental health and developmental disabilities. In addition to that, I serve as a consultant to the court monitor in the federal Jensen case. And there is a comprehensive plan of action that the department is following that the court monitor is monitoring. This came about because one of those is the modernization of Rule 40. Now, the goal of the advocates and many of the members that sat on the committee was to clearly state that Rule 40, as it existed, it had a lot of positive things in it about positive approaches, de-escalation, but in the end it said, but if all else fails, you can write a plan to programmatically use restraints. We wanted to separate those two because over time it became DHS quit monitoring those Rule 40 plans, even though they had to be submitted, they weren't monitoring them. And it appeared to imply in the rule that you could go from zero to restraint pretty quickly. That's how it evolved. That was not its intent, but that's how it evolved. And was very much a part of what happened at the Mito facility. So we recommended that that be changed. What the committee and many of the advocates wanted was, one, separate any language about what is or isn't permitted for aversive procedures, but rewrite the rule to talk about the positive practices. In other words, here's how you approach positive, person-centered practices to de-escalate, to eliminate the need for seclusion restraint. In the party negotiations, of which I sit in on the party's meetings, somehow DHS got the impression that the plaintiff's counsel said everything had to be in rule and took that to mean everything had to be in the same rule, which would defeat what many of us wanted. I've been in touch with the plaintiff's counsel, and that's not his position. He wants the positive supports, whether that's in law or rule, and he wants the elimination of seclusion restraint, especially mechanical restraints. But he in no way says that they have to be in the rule. And so the other part of this that is very frustrating is that this language to repeal on a future rule writing was not shown to the court monitor or the plaintiff's counsel prior to it appearing. In fact, I just learned about it Monday night. So everything, you know, really was supposed to at least be noticed to them before it went into law, because this happened at the end of last year. There was a lot of confusion. There were tremendous amendments in the conference committee, which only can possibly lead to mistakes because of the nature of how fast things happen there. So we're saying they intend to promulgate the rule by August 15th of 15. You have one more session before that date. We were really asking for an opportunity to thoroughly vet this issue. There's no need to repeal it now. And it's somewhat disingenuous to put the repealer on autopilot when they should have already drafted the rule and submitted a copy to everyone, you know, which then would begin the rule writing process. People would comment on it, agree or disagree. But they haven't even done that yet. So to support a repealer on a future promise of something being included in a future rule for which we have no idea whether it will include or not include the things that the department says it will include, whether they'll survive the rule writing process. I think it's extremely premature. It's not needed now. Even when I spoke with Ann Berry, she agreed not to oppose an amendment that's going on in the House for that. But, and we're going to meet this afternoon on some of these issues. But I really do not believe that this language needs to be here. The department is neither helped or hurt by having it in this year, because we have next year if everyone determines that it really needs to be in next year's statute.
Senator Lurie?
Madam Chair, and I'm very glad you came forward and registered these concerns and want to just talk for a minute to members that I have just recently been made aware of these concerns and take them very, very seriously. I think one of the things that Ms. Oppheim just mentioned is that the department is not opposing these amendments going on in the House, so the House and the Senate will be different. It will keep this issue alive. I haven't really had a chance to loop back and talk to DHS about this yet, and I would ask members that we keep this in for now. I need to work with DHS a little bit. I think that the concerns regarding clarity, you know, for people trying to learn these new statutes that were just put in place last year are very important. I think that making sure that we have a meaningful process going forward with stakeholder engagement is very important, and we probably can get to the point where there is agreement around this, and it likely will be that we take these out. But I'm not certain about that now, and if both bodies just take it out, I worry that we won't get to that place. So these concerns have been registered. I take them very seriously, and we will be working collaboratively with DHS to get to the right place as we move forward. But I think it would be wise if we left them in for today. If the will of the committee is otherwise, you know, that so be it. But that's where I'd like to wind up today and give us some time to talk to DHS and see what happens between now and Monday when we release our article. And as for the constant issue, queuing and supervision, I have been tracking that one for quite some time as well. To introduce that in language, I think, would cost some...
Changing the definition.
Isn't that what it...
For by 19,
they
said a year.
19?
Last estimate.
We're not going to be able to find that kind of money in this biennium, but it's an issue that I take very seriously, and as Ms. Henry appropriately noted, CMS is holding off on approving our state plan amendment for CFSS at this time. But I don't think we can... actually put that in statute and have a spreadsheet worked around accommodating those costs right now. So I take it, again, that one very seriously as well, and don't really have a solution right now as we sit here. I think I wouldn't be able to put a bill in balance and carry it out of our division into the omnibus finance bill. So keep working on that one as well. And keep working with advocates and with DHS, and maybe DHS wishes to come up and, I don't know, add some additional insight into these two issues, but they are ones that I've been engaged in and expect further action before we leave here this session for sure.
Any questions from members for the testifiers? Senator Kiffmeyer?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just wanted to get the page number. It's a very long bill and articles.
Madam Chair, there's actually Article 5, Section 52
are
the repealers.
Page 135 is all the way in the end, Senator Kiffmeyer.
All the way at the end. The last section of Article 5 are the repealers that, that Henry and Ms. Oppheim were discussing.
I didn't bring the bill up with
Oppenheim.
Me.
It's 135.
But isn't the first one okay, and it's the second and third one that...
Yeah. It's...
Senator Lurie?
Probably paragraphs B, C, and D, I think, that are problematic in Section 52.
Senator Lori, can you repeat that, please?
It's A, too.
It's A, too?
Oh, is it A also? Okay. Okay.
It's A, B, C, and D. It's the whole thing.
Sorry.
So, you know, again, I think these are these concerns deserve a great deal more attention. We're working on it. I had my first introduction to them this morning, and we're we're working on it. You know, if additional members wish to engage, that you know, that's always welcomed and helpful.
Any further discussion, questions from members? Thank you. Any further testimony from the public or from the department? And again, we'll revisit this on Monday as well, so there'll be further opportunity for discussion and for testifying. Senator Lori, seeing no more questions.
With that, I move Senate File 2754, as amended, be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS articles for the omnibus finance bill.
On that motion, all those in Senator Benson?
Madam Chair, because we don't fully fund the 5%, I will not be supporting this bill.
Any further discussion? Again, on the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Oh, motion. I think that was motion prevails, unless someone.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Lori and Madam Chair, do we need, would you like us to hold these in our packets? Because we'll be looking at them again. It's a lot of paper.
Well, if this
we'll
is
have another engrossment.
We'll have Senator
these amendments.
Lori's version
That's right.
on Monday.
Yes. I wish we could save a tree.
I wish we could figure a tree. We got to figure this out somehow.
Thank you. With that, the committee stands adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.